The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is All Things Elite. Welcome back to All Things Elite. Load up the pod, man, it's on when we speak. Rich right here, let me warm it up for Austin and Floyd. Couldn't be no one but the boys. When it come to All Things Elite from the fan perspective, swear, man, it ain't no question. Hear from them first. Swear, man, they putting in the work. No, they had to get me for the verse. Social Suplex Network Zone. I was at a time in your headphones. Austin and Floyd on the microphone. Backing out on the rant, getting in the zone. Pulling up the show, giving 7 stars, you already know. Who else could it be but the show with the proclivity for a positivity? I'm gone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 225th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Sumwitz, and I am your host of this lovely show, joined, as always, by my good buddy and friend, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. My man, how you doing?
Dude, I'm doing great. We're recording, I guess this is very early Saturday morning, February 24th. But on the 23rd, I got a really big package from this beautiful company called Fanatics. With all my Super Bowl gear in it. Then I am now wearing my Super Bowl ring. I'm not gonna go, like I said, I promise I'm not going too far into it, but just a quick story about it. Quick story is that when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, so it was also the year, it was pretty much in the same year I married my wife, right? And I don't wear jewelry, right? At all. Like, at all. If you've ever seen me, I only wear one thing on my hand, and that is my wedding ring. And it is a silicone ring. Well, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and my wife bought me, they did a limited edition Kansas City Chiefs ring, silicone ring, and I was wearing it as my wedding ring for a long time. Well, during the pandemic, I went to Jacksonville, and I forget what show it was. I went with Tiffany, so I think it was the first Double or Nothing in Jacksonville, and I washed my hands at the airport, and I think I just washed the thing right off. So it just, it like, literally, I noticed it, like, it was the only thing I wear, so I noticed it, like, 10 minutes later, and I just couldn't find it, called the airport and all this stuff. I was like, it's a silicone ring, so it has no value, so if someone even saw it, they probably just threw it away, right?
Right.
So it was no big deal. The Chiefs didn't win the Super Bowl the second time. I was like, oh, I'm excited, I can replace my ring, and then they didn't put a ring out. They just didn't do it at all. I don't know what groove life and whatever had with them, but they didn't put a ring out. Well, I was like, so I didn't think I was going to actually have a war ring in a year. I had another Chiefs ring that basically got destroyed, like it got chipped and then it just broke. So the Super Bowl won today, and of course, in my email, Groove Life popped up and said, oh, we got the Super Bowl ring. So this time, and you know how I'll tell you, you will grow, you will get older, and you will get wiser. And I bought two. So I bought two, so I'm wearing my ring now, and it's just, it feels right on my hand. It feels like love. You know, it feels like love, and it's like, this wasn't even a brag about Chiefs winning Super Bowl. I was kind of happy I got my ring back. So,
that's
pretty cool.
That's good to see you reunited with that. We are literally recording this too, like, incredibly late. We weren't able to record yesterday because I was stacked with stuff I had to do, and then work was busy today. So we are thankfully getting this out, like I said, basically Saturday morning. So as late as we possibly could, but we're getting it up. We're making, because we want to make sure we hit this.
Yes.
Especially considering, like, other than a few other outside stuff, there's only Dynamite that we needed to talk about. So we should be able to knock this out for you guys.
The Elimination Chamber starts in 3.5 hours, and I was getting up for it anyway. So I literally, I've been asleep 80% of the day. So when you're like, oh, it's going to be a little later, I'm like, I'm fine. You know, I'm literally just waking up. So that was cool. And, you know, I was at Dynamite this week, so that was cool. So
yeah, we had to talk about that. And and all that kind of stuff. And like I said, we're so close to Revolution that these shows, like I said, there's a lot to look forward to for them. Especially considering, too, and I'll mention it when we get into Dynamite, what was tweeted before the show even went on the air. So, because I do want to talk about that as well. But before we get into everything with the show, guys, we appreciate your guys' support and everything, but we want to make sure you guys continue to do so. Downloading this fine show, whether it's on Google, Apple Podcasts, means the world to us. If you listen to us on Spotify, wherever you choose to listen to us, also share us around with your friend, family, coworkers, whoever you wish, and rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And follow us on social media on Twitter. We are at AT Elite Pod. You can also follow at Social Suplex, who make this show possible. And you can check out all the they have on their network. I am at Austin Sumowicz, S-Z-U-M-O-W-I-C-Z. And Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. And the news of the week, I did not know about this news of the week before I got the notes from Floyd. Literally a couple minutes ago. The news of the week, I will read this verbatim. Is O'Shea Jackson really trying to help? So, Floyd, I don't want to speak out of turn. I have his tweets pulled up, but would you like to go into what this man has been talking about?
And again, I want to say I generally wouldn't cover this, but literally there was no collision last week. So we just it's just basically a Dynamite review and some stuff outside. So we needed a little content, and thank you, O'Shea Jackson, for providing such content. But the reason I say is he really trying to help, because he was on Chris Van Vliet this week. I like Chris Van Vliet, met him in Dallas, pretty cool guy. That's neither here nor there, because, you know, people do interviews. If O'Shea Jackson was like, hey, I want to be on All Things Elite, he would be on All Things Elite, because he is an actor. You know, he is Ice Cube, the rapper's son, but he has did his own career. He's had a movie with Seth Rogen. He's in the Star Wars, one of the Star Wars TV shows. Of course, he played Ice Cube in a movie. So this dude has a career, and it is growing. So don't get me wrong. This isn't by no, I'm not, when I say Ice Cube Jr., as someone that was born in 1981, it is with nothing but respect. So, you know, he is an avid wrestling fan. Like, since I found out who this man was several years ago with him sitting in the front row at a WWE show and him tweeting about wrestling. And that's how I started following. So I am not against people with differing opinions of mine. Well, on the show, and this is the clip. I mean, I did not watch the whole interview. I want to be 100% honest, because I generally, you know, always say, yeah, you got to get to the details. But I thought the clip that was given out gave enough information so I could comment on it. And it was asked, he's like, he's online and he says, I'm watching AEW, and he's like, I get online and I tweet, who is this guy? And then he's like, I don't need somebody saying I'm not a real fan, I'm not this, just give me some more information. And then he basically goes on to say, you know, like, AEW should do more video packages to show people why they should care about each person, especially these dream matches, you know, like, you know, Minoru Suzuki, Jun Akiyama, all these people that they announce that just show up. He wants video packages, as he says it would help the audience grow. Okay? All right. I hear him. He's a wrestling fan. He has an opinion. His opinion is valuable. I want to say that before I say what I say, because I was actually fairly angry. Because let me tell you why I was angry. I'll start with why I was angry. What O'Shea Jackson Jr. does for a living. O'Shea Jackson Jr. is an actor, very good actor. Every movie I've seen, I've enjoyed. Every role he's played, I think he brings something different to the role. I think he's really good. But you're an actor. And wrestling is a TV show. I know people want to compare it to UFC, and people want to compare it to this, but wrestling's a TV show, right? And if I turn it on, I don't know, like, a show that you like. Let's say Breaking Bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Breaking Bad. season 4, episode 2 of Breaking Bad. That's where I start. I didn't watch season 1, 2, 3. Somebody said, you should watch Breaking Bad. And it, the next episode on was season 4, episode 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Breaking Bad going to tell me the details of every character on that TV show?
No.
You're supposed to have been watching the first 4 seasons to understand who the characters on the show are. Because you're obviously a fan of that show, right? AEW has been on for, and if on that show they introduce a new character, are they going to tell you everything you need to know about that new character? Or are you expected to watch the show and to develop emotions negatively or positive for that character?
I think they're expecting you to understand that.
Yes. So again, one of my favorite movies is the Lord of the Ring movie. When we meet Aragorn, this is from Sam B, Sir Sam on Twitter. I love Sir Sam. I literally, if I at any point in my life couldn't do this show, me or Austin, that's who I would ask to take over All Things Elite. That is how much I respect Sam's opinions on pretty much everything. Like, we don't agree on everything, but I respect his opinions. I'd be like, Sam B, take ATE for me. Take our baby and go, because I think he's that good. And he brings up Aragorn, because I wanted to give him credit for this one, because I think it's perfect. When you meet Aragorn in the first Lord of the Rings movie, he is just a guy in the back of a bar. And then over the next 2 movies, he develops. You see the leadership. You see what he struggles with. They give you more information about him. And then he becomes, you know, the king. Spoiler alert if somebody hasn't seen a movie that's been out this long. But, yeah. So, and it's just like, so, you, coming from TV and movies, should understand there is a amount of character development. When the Dark Order debuted, Evil Uno and Evil Stew, there were a lot of indie fans that knew who Player One and Player Dose was, and they popped. Me had no idea who those two men were.
I was gonna say, I was in the building for that show, and I audibly was like,
and that's fine, because that is a reaction. And then over the next few years, we've gotten to know the Dark Order. They've been in big matches, they've been in everything, but if they told you everything about the Dark Order when they first get, you wouldn't have developed that emotional connection from them losing, them getting bullied by Brody, after Brody passed. There's none of that, right? So I say that to say, there is 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of NXT, and 2 hours of SmackDown. They present wrestling exactly how you said. And you know what? That is how you need your professional wrestling, enjoy it. That's fine. But AEW is what's called a challenger brand. Tony Khan has used it very often. The one thing they did, and this is what's my problem with the last 6 months of last year, is that when you're a challenger brand, the worst thing you can be looked at is as a lesser version of what is already done. A lesser version of what is already done. So what AEW does is take their own thing and decide how they present it. And everyone was like, well, I was having a conversation. I don't want to bury anybody, so I'm not going to say who, but I was having a conversation with a friend, and he was like, and we were it was one of the guys I went to show with, and we were just talking about vignettes and all that stuff. And he was like, he would help the show grow. And I was like, okay. To a casual person, help the show grow. And I'm like, I don't believe a lot of casuals are watching wrestling. And if you change that, I think it may help a nominal amount as far as growing your audience. Like, a very little amount as far as growing your audience. But I think it would do a huge portion to pissing your current audience off.
Well, and I also think, too, just to piggyback off that a little bit too, like with the idea of, like, you know, more in-depth video packages and stuff like that, I also think that wrestling fans, specifically wrestling fans online, also tend to like really like zone in on some of the most minute bullshit, does not matter things for the most part. Not to say that video packages don't matter, because they do, and they're a big part of pro wrestling. But like, I remember there was a significant period in time where wrestling fans were so anal about moving graphics for pay-per-view matches. And like, when they brought them into AEW and you had moving graphics for the wrestler face-offs and all that kind of stuff, and for the match promo images, people went nuts on Twitter. I remember seeing people go crazy about this. Some people, I bet, couldn't even tell you that that was a thing that they used to do or did do at one point. And it was just a hot button thing of like people being like, remember these? They should do these more again. And more so, and like I said, what you said as well, the last thing you want to be is viewed at as just this, but lesser or cheaper. It's all that kind of stuff. That's the last thing that you want to be viewed at. And AEW, I think, does a great job of just being like, you don't know who this guy is, watch his match, and then you'll want to see more of this guy, and you will, he'll be such a great performer and such a great athlete and such a great wrestler. You will be in, like, just naturally be like, I need to Google this guy. I need to go see his other matches. I need to see this dude in his natural habitat, wherever promotion or whatnot that he came from. I think that's been one of the biggest things. It's like, as long as they come out and they do what they are asked to do, it's going to lead to people wanting to search them up. It's the same way of like when an artist is featured on another artist's song. It's like, I could listen to a song by an artist I love and he's got a featured guy. I have no idea who this guy is, but he flows and he or she sounds amazing on this. I need to go see what other stuff they have. And that's just kind of like how that's supposed to work. Now, it doesn't like work all the time, and that just matters from performer to performer. So
yeah, my first match, my first Okada and first Okada and Omega match, full beginning to end match, it was when Cody debuted, I think, Wrestle Kingdom 17. I if I said the wrong number, 16 or whatever, I think it was year 2017. When they again said the wrong number, I'm just not gonna Google it. Just know it was my first Okada Omega match. It was Cody's
Wrestle
first
Kingdom 2017 was Wrestle Kingdom 11.
Wrestle Kingdom 11. There you go. It was super off. I think I was thinking Wrestle Kingdom. Yeah, the year. So Cody was announced for the show. Yeah, he had joined the Bullet Club, and he was wrestling Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega, and Kazuchika Okada were the main event. All right. Never seen them in a full match, seen clips online, blah, blah, blah. Didn't know anything about these men. From the entrances, Kenny Omega comes out as a video game character. I'm on Twitter. People throwing out, it's this game from this character, blah, blah, blah. Kazuchika Okada comes out with the Rainmaker. Great. Again, no emotional attachment to either man, right? The match starts. Again, one of the best matches I've ever seen in my life. It was like I don't think I'd ever been more impressed in an initial view of two people than I've ever been impressed in that. And I've been fans ever since. Did I go back and watch 20 Okada matches or 20 Omega matches before the match? No, I let them tell their story, and they told their stories with their body, and that's what made me a fan. I didn't need all this background information and all that stuff, but that's me.
Dude, that was me too with when Shinsuke Nakamura got signed, when like that announcement after Wrestle Kingdom 10, they announced that Shinsuke, AJ Styles, and the Good Brothers all were getting signed at the same time, basically. And I was like, well, I know who AJ Styles is. I know who the Good Brothers is, specifically Luke Gallows. I knew who he was. No idea who Shinsuke Nakamura is. And I was like, well, their last match was literally Wrestle Kingdom 10, AJ Styles versus Shinsuke. Let me just watch that match. And immediately I was like, oh, Shinsuke is the shit. And that's got me so hyped for when he wrestled Sami Zayn at NXT TakeOver for his first WWE match. dude, I was so ecstatic. I'm like, oh my God, this guy who I've only just seen wrestle like once against my favorite NXT like star ever, like, and one of my favorite wrestlers, period, in Sami Zayn. I was like, that's all I need. That's the selling point. Because it's really, it's not that hard to sell you like on somebody if you just see them perform. And like I said, they got a lot of buzz, like, especially if there's somebody that's established somewhere else. If they got enough buzz from where they are, there's a good chance they can sell you on it if they just give you one look.
Yeah, and four-time commentator winner, Excalibur, does a great job of giving you the pertinent.
Yes, he does.
Does yes, giving you the pertinent information of what you need to know right then. So like I said, could they do exactly what O'Shea Jackson Jr. said? Absolutely. Absolutely. But Tony Khan and the owner of this brand and the person that decides what the product is has decided that is not how he wants to present his product. That's simple. It means that's it. If you're watching AEW, you're a fan or not a fan, this is how this product is going to be presented. And Google is your friend. If you need to know everything about a person before watching them wrestle, you have Google. But most of us just decide to give people a chance. And it's just like, you're not emotionally involved with every, you're not emotionally involved with every wrestler before you see them wrestle a match. I remember the first time I saw Brock Lesnar walk through the ring. I didn't know who the fuck Brock Lesnar was. I mean, like, they was like, oh, he won the NCAA National Championship. What does that mean to me, who doesn't care about amateur wrestling? Nothing. It means nothing to me. But I did see this big 6'4", 260-pound beast, and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's like, I could do this with a lot of people. I think getting to know people and growing and evolving is your thing. And I know Minoru Suzuki and Jun Akiyama aren't characters that are going to grow over the years because they're pro bowl guys. But, you know, if you sit there and you listen to Excalibur, he'll tell you why they're important. And he'll tell you why this match means anything. And again, and this is a statement I used, a dream match to some is an introduction match to others.
Yeah.
I did not know who Thanos was when he was on the clip at the end of Avengers.
Exactly. If you're a Marvel fan, you need to read the entirety of Civil War to enjoy the Avengers Civil War movie that came out? Or did you just have to know, oh, Iron Man hates Captain America because of this reason? Like, is it way more in-depth than the comics? Absolutely, and honestly better. But it doesn't mean you can't get any less enjoyment out of the movie just from what they tell you from base knowledge of who these characters and who these people are from what they are showing.
Yes, like, MCU, every Marvel movie up until Avengers Endgame, you got a little bit more of Thanos. A piece of Thanos. It's like Thanos did this. And by the time he had his big movie, you knew everything you need to know about the movie. But if you started on Infinity Wars and Endgame, you know, you're like, why is this guy important? And they're not going to go back.
Well,
and
you'd also
you.
Be like, "What's what? Who are all these like 70 characters that they have?"
Yes, it's like, no, that's not how TV and movies work. And it's like, I know you want to compare it to UFC, but it's not UFC. It's not. Wrestling is a TV show. It is a TV show. It is a soap opera that has been playing for 30 years. And Randy Orton coming back and, you know, attacking Solo Sikoa means more to somebody that's been watching it for the whole time, more than a video package will ever tell. And that's in WWE. It's just like, I don't know. And O'Shea Jackson Jr. directly played a character that at the beginning of the movie was just announced as a lowly old bartender. He was just a bartender that was in the know. And by the end of the movie, you find out he's the mastermind of the whole thing. I'm not saying the movie name because I don't want to spoil it for people. I actually did look it up later this week. I used Google. It's this crazy thing called Google. And I remembered, I was like, because I saw the movie in theaters, but I couldn't remember the actual name. But then I remembered it, and I was just like, okay, you literally played a character where they introduced him with no information, really. And then by the end of the movie, he was the most important character in the movie. I don't know what to do, but again, he is allowed his opinion. I don't like the people that attacked him, said his dad should have pulled out, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I know. It's like, dude, it's an opinion on a TV show. But again, I always say, I don't think those people that get on and say the meanest things actually care about it. I think they get on there as outliers because they get to say mean shit. Because I wasn't on the early days of Twitter, but my friend Jason was. And he always tells me the earliest days of Twitter were just getting on and saying the meanest shit you possibly could to people.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't like you didn't even believe it. It was just you were just everybody was. It wasn't like some people were trolls. Like everybody was a troll.
Everybody.
Yeah. And then they, you know, blocks and mutes and all these different filters and, you know, having a standard of community standards. Those drove some of that away. But again, people do like to join on hot topic, hot button topics, and their name, their account name is WJ1237912 or whatever, and they want to say the meanest shit, and you just put up a middle finger and move on, because those people are idiots. It's like, I just hate that, I hate that people say that they are representative of what AEW fans are. I am representative of what AEW fans are. Most of my people in AEW are like me. They can be like, we respect what you think. We cannot agree with it and still respect what you think.
Yeah. Dude, I come on here and scream about how much I hate the Young Bucks constantly, and Floyd will go out here and be like, yeah, that's by design. I'm like, I don't fucking care. And he's like, okay. Like, yeah. Like it's just how it goes.
Yeah, it's like, dude, I will respect you. I will respect you as long... I will respect you as long as you present your thing respectful. And that's, O'Shea is never mean.
He's just upfront with it.
Yeah, if you see any of his mean tweets, they are only reactions to people going outside the fucking line. And he needs to, you know, do what he needs to do, and that's his business. But when he presents this, just when he presented it on there, it wasn't mean. It was like, this is what I'm used to seeing in wrestling. And this would help me enjoy this wrestling more. And if you're watching wrestling and you don't, you know, have ideas on why, how you would enjoy your product more, I don't know how you watch. That's how people watch wrestling. That's how wrestling fans watch wrestling. We're always thinking of how it can be better. I know some people just, you know, the casual just watches it and it goes on in their life. And like I said, I don't know how, like I said, the casual viewer... Right, which I say is a myth, because it's like, if you're a casual viewer, you know you're not gonna know stuff when watching.
Yes,
you know it. You accept it. That's why you're a casual viewer. You know you're not gonna know everything about everybody when you're watching it. It's you just have it on probably while you're doing something else or whatever. Like I said, I think you could do it, but I don't think the effect would be this monumental effect. It's not gonna launch AEW back into the hot area that it was. It's just a few people will be like, oh, okay, that's better. And then a few people are going to be like, oh, that's worse. And then again, worse than all of it, oh, they're just trying to be WWE.
Exactly. So either way, that's kind of, since he'd been making a little bit of buzz, that's where our thoughts are. And in terms of, is he really trying to help? I don't know if he's necessarily trying to help, but I do think he is just being upfront with his thoughts about wrestling.
Yeah,
I know, like a little bit recently, he tweeted stuff about his thoughts about the Wrestling Observer Awards, which we'll get to at the end of the show. And I think it's just him being upfront as him as a wrestling fan.
Yeah, I will
him,
say
him starting conversation he's very much getting people talking too.
No matter the result, I said this last year when they cleaned up. I said it this year when they lose. I do not know why everybody gets up in arms by a fan club vote, because that's all it is.
It is exactly what it is. They're very much. They do not matter to anybody except for the people making them.
Yes, and it's just like, yes, if you think somebody else was the match of the year or the best tag team or whatever, okay. And I don't know, like people get so fucking angry.
Oh, I know.
Like about a fan club vote, and I'm just like, I think some of it's performative to get people to come listen to their shit. Don't get me wrong. And if it works for you, tip hat, and we're not going to do that. We're not going to get that angry about it. We don't really get angry about a lot of things. It's
and if it is angry, it's barely angry at all. Like I said, it's mostly just like
we're talking shit. Yeah, we're having fun. It's like we don't. That's not our brand. There are plenty other people out there that will get on here and just yell. If I'm excited, it's mostly about, if I'm happy or I'm yelling, it's about something that brought me joy, something that brought me angry.
I can't be hung up about stuff that makes me mad because like it's just not helpful to me.
Because wrestling is what brings me joy in life. I don't want it to be what pisses me off.
Exactly. So we'll move on to what we do enjoy, which is AEW. So we'll get right into Dynamite, which once again, our boy Floyd, coming from Tulsa, Oklahoma at this show, he was in attendance for this one as well. So, I mean, he got exactly what he wanted, FTR opening the show.
Dude, it's so crazy. When I bought these tickets, I bought the Austin tickets, and not you. I bought Austin.
No, I ain't getting tickets for a while. I bought
tickets to Austin, Texas, and I bought tickets to for Valentine's Day, and I bought tickets for the 21st in Tulsa. I was fully aware that my boys, FTR, are colliders. They are colliders, and what that means is they don't work Wednesdays. And not only did I get them at one of the shows, I got them at both of the shows. And I was hyped, and then they announced that they were going to, I mean, it's the first match, so we can kind of get into it, that they're going to be wrestling the Blackpool Combat Club. Dude, so I went with my friend Noel, and this was his first time seeing FTR live. Me and Dan had seen FTR live once, together once before, and then my friend Jay, who's big, he watches a lot of AEW, so he of course had seen FTR live, and then my friend Caleb and his friend Robert, and we were all there. We had some really good soul food before the show at this place called Fixins. If you happen to be friends with me on Facebook, I accidentally tagged the Fixins in Los Angeles, not the one in Tulsa. Oh, well, everybody's like, I thought you were in Tulsa. I'm like, yeah, I picked the wrong one. The wrong one. Okay, it said Fixins. And I was like, I thought, you know, when you check in, it's based on your location. So I figured it was going to check in the closest Fixins, not the one in L.A. But, had some really good food, really good show. And then I got the best tag team in the world. You talk about the different polls and stuff. Like, literally, I think FTR swept them. So they are the best tag team in the world right now. And they're wrestling against two of the best wrestlers in the world. John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli, and individually, Mox, Castagnoli, Mox. I've never been the biggest Mox guy. I am not. Mm-hmm. I'm not Sir Sam, who is probably one of the bigger Mox fans on earth. And Claudio, it's like, but that reverence.
I'm a big Claudio guy.
That reverence and respect for both of those people are out of this world. So, and this is. I'll tell people that I've enjoyed the storyline because this is pro wrestling.
Yes.
Because, like, Mox and Castagnoli had been in their thing is basically right now, BCC's gimmick is they are the gatekeepers of AEW. That is, I mean, if you're not understanding it and it's not clear, which I feel like their interviews and promos have made it very clear, they're the gatekeepers. And they are there to measure everybody and make sure that everybody is putting in the maximum amount of effort to be in their company. So on a collision, they said, hey, we'll take on any two guys in the world. And out comes the FTR, if not the best tag team in the world. And then they started fighting. And this whole feud is not about who said anything about anybody's mama. It's not about, breaking in somebody's house. It's about, we are two badasses, and we think we're better than you two badasses.
Exactly. And they're two groups of guys who hit hard and absolutely, like,
beat the hell out of each other. So
yes, and in this match, it was exactly that. And before the match, talking to my friend Dave Finichel, and I was like, you know, this is leading to a match at Revolution, and it's going to be stipulation match. It's going to be a bigger match at Revolution. And he's like, no, I don't think so. And I was like, okay. And this is the first time I've ever used this moniker ever. But I was talking shit. So I was like, you're questioning the king of AEW podcast? I was like, you're questioning me? When I tell you something's going to be that way, it is going to be that way.
You were pretty spot on.
Yeah, I was like, this is what's going on. I was like, this is leading to a different match. And he tells me, of course, Dave is like asking for details. And I say, oh, man. Because there had only been, what, four matches announced?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot. Well, also, too, I forgot to mention, too, the one thing I forgot to mention as the show, as we get into the show, because I want to know what your reaction was, too, because Tony Khan made a tweet leading into the show that night, basically being like, I've never had such a hectic lead up to a show when it came to people not being able to, yeah, it said we're going to have up to 5 minutes of overrun because it's been one of the most hectic weeks for injuries plus unexpected unavailability that I can recall in AEW, especially since the pandemic era. What was your reaction to when that tweet was sent out before?
It sounded like he was preparing us for a shitty show.
Honestly, I was like, what?
And I was like, is this something? I'm like questioning TK. I say trust in TK. And I, at this moment, I was questioning the shit out of TK. I'm like, dude, if I was at home, I'd be like, And I was that so-called casual, and I followed on Twitter or whatever. And I'm like, maybe I should go find something else to do. Because it sounded like he was just like, you know, and it was just like, the two things really didn't go together. It was like, we got a 5 minute overrun. Also, we have limited availability.
It's right, like, exactly. Like, we're going to make the show go longer as we're like struggling to fill time.
Yeah. So it felt like it would go shorter.
That's a double negative right there.
Yeah. So it was very weird. And I was like, this falls in line. I was like, dude, there's not a lot. I could see FTR and and Blackpool Combat Club going like 40, 45 minutes. Now, you watched it on TV.
Yes.
Did they announce the time limit on TV?
I couldn't hear it.
Okay. No,
so because, I just heard the bell ring.
Because I'll tell you, in time, we didn't know there was a time limit until they said it was 10 minutes remaining or in a 20-minute match. Because if they told me this match was only 20 minutes, I was like, oh, it's going to a draw. I would have said that immediately. But, I mean, maybe they're doing it, you know, in person. So the last three shows of AEW, you know, it started with these, at least the FTR series, it started with they had a time limit. And, you know, Mox tapped out Dax in the last 2 minutes. And now this match, and when they came out, now, I will say this. When I saw how they were wrestling in that first 5 or 10 minutes, they were on an incredible... They were wrestling a very fast-paced match. I truly felt like this wasn't a typical FTR match because they were going. And I'm like, man, are they going to be able to keep this up for 40 minutes? Because, like, when you're in a tag team match, when you could go 30, you go 30, 40 minutes, you usually get those long... double teams where, you know, like they're beating on a guy for 10 minutes like and it builds time
for that high tag weight.
Dude, significantly longer. No, this match was fast paced. I saw my boy Dax with his bad knee getting up, getting that drop kick, baby. I was like, I popped harder for Dax doing that drop kick than anything that match. I know. Like, he is very open with how much he struggles with his knees, like the injections that he gets in his knees so he can basically move and keep doing this. So when he hit the drop kick, I was like, oh, okay, rock and roll is here to stay. I was like, it took me back. And Cash is just, God, he's a freakish athlete. When they built to that double clothesline off the top ropes, so cool. And goddamn, Mox and Dax, I mean... You know, they always talk about the, you're trying to, suspension of disbelief. Those men are the definition of suspension of disbelief. They're like chop and punch things. It just looks like they're knocking the shit out of each other. And then you had Cash and Claudio, and they were doing the Euros, and I'm like, hey, Cash, you my boy. You number one. I love you. Well, you really want to throw European uppercuts with Claudio? You see that man, right? Yeah, you see that man, right? it was just like, it was just so freaking physical. Like, so freaking physical. And it was just like, I'm like feeling each chop, and they're going through and they're echoing it. And it was like, there was no down part in this 20 minutes, right? And literally, it didn't give you this idea who was going to win. Every time, I will say this, it's a clear story. Every time tag team tactics are needed, FTR is going to have the advantage. Every time it's like a lot of one-on-one stuff, Blackpool Combat Club has the advantage. And it truly is how it should be, because, you know, you're dealing with a former ROH world champion and you're filling with a former AEW world champion. This dude, like, Mox is the alpha of AEW. And I don't mean that in, like, the Jericho way. He is the apex. He's the guy in AEW. So, again, losing a fight to Mox is not like you've lost to just anyone, you know. So, this match lined up and told the story, the outside work, the running into stairs. Like, I'm completely enthralled. Very few pictures from this match, because it was just, I was completely just living in that moment. Then in the end, they're all in the ring. And of course, FTR gets the advantage, and they're about to catch, Mox with the Shatter Machine, which I liked how they did it, because they really kind of locked in a standstill, because he went up for the Shatter Machine, and the time went and Dax dropped him. They still haven't hit Mox or Claudio with the Shatter Machine. They're obviously building to this at some point, but they haven't hit him with the Shatter Machine. It was like, if we had 10 more seconds, maybe they won, but you don't know because they didn't hit him with the move. And it was a very even 20-minute match, perfect setup for a longer match.
Yeah, no, these guys beat the living hell out of each other. And like you said, it did feel like it moved quicker. And when they said that, like, you know, when I heard the time limit start being mentioned every bit and bit, I was like, oh yeah, we're gonna get to this point where I'm like, I don't think this is gonna make it be ending before the time limit hits. So I loved it. I thought it was an amazing way to open up the show. I don't think there's a way you can't go wrong when you open up with BCC, any form of BCC opening up. And then, of course, FTR doing what they do best. Spectacular. I love the fact that the 5 more minutes has now become part of, like, you know, AEW's reaction to a draw is like, you know, fans are chanting it, because, like, I'm always waiting for it, like, because it's happened now, I think, twice, two or three times, where they just go, 5 more minutes. It's like, it couldn't even be, like, you know, just, like, another, like, they made sure they picked the number on that. So I love the fact that they got the crowd chanting that as well.
In the arena, because the referee, they're standing facing off each other. Again, you don't have Excalibur telling you what's going on, and the referee calls for the bell. We thought we got 5 more minutes.
Yeah.
And we thought we were getting 5 more minutes, and it turns out, no, he was saying the match is over when he rang the bell. And it's, again, it was kind of a false thing. We thought we were about to get 5 more minutes, and then they fought, and then everybody came out, and I was just like, oh, yeah. And it's building to Greensboro. No, and guess who's gonna be there? Immigrated on North Carolina. So,
you know it, dude. You know it.
It's crazy because this feud pretty much is probably gonna end at Greensboro. I've been here for every part of the feud because, you know, the first singles match and now this, and it was just like, dude, I'm ecstatic. And also, I think people, you know, I mean, seeing what FTR does, and you know, and again, it's just, this is old school pro wrestling. What I look for in pro wrestling, as in, like, man, the whole story is these two guys just don't like each other, and actually they respect each other, but hey, I'm a bigger badass than you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be exciting to see these guys blow this whole thing off. We had Orange Cassidy talking about backstage, all the stuff that he had been basically doing, including mentioning how he went to RevPro, and they're like, you've done all this stuff recently. Are you cleared? Because they had Doc Samson there, and he's like, he's right here. He's like, he's going to let me know if I'm cleared. And Doc Samson basically said, barely. You're barely cleared. And he's like, well, then I'm still going to wrestle. And obviously very much Samson was like, no. And that was Orange Cassidy taking the place of Trent Beretta in his match. So instead of Trent being involved with Mike Bennett's Orange Cassidy getting involved.
Correct. Yes, I was looking forward to that, Orange Cassidy versus Mike Bennett. And there were some people in the crowd. There was a little kid dressed as Orange Cassidy. And he was very excited when they announced that match.
Exactly. So a lot of people who came to see OC got to see OC. So it's good to see that happened. And then FTR was being interviewed saying how, you think you run this place, BCC. We don't bow down to anybody. We do our own shit. And if we don't have a match, they don't have a match. So I'm going to say, and then that's when BCC are still screaming about what happened beforehand in the match, how there wasn't a winner. And they're still being separated by security since the end of the opening match. And yeah, like I said, I'm so excited to see that these guys go at it again, because they're all such great workers. They're all such great wrestlers, and they beat the hell out of each other. And I know it's going to produce quality once Revolution kicks off.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I am I'm looking forward to that match. At this point, since, like, I was sure there was going to be a stipulation, and it'll probably be some kind of stipulation. Maybe it's the time limit's an hour or something. But what I'm seeing is just, like, there hasn't been a winner. So I don't think you have to elevate it. I think it could just be a regular tag team match.
Exactly, because then people can still be hyped for it because they haven't seen who the winner is.
So you can just do a regular tag team match. But, you know, maybe it's a tornado tag. Maybe there's a little something extra. But I would just be, at this point, I would be fine with it just being a regular tag team match. I did assume FTR would figure out a way to win it, maybe on a roll-up or something. And then, you know, Blackpool Combat Club would jump them, and then that would escalate the situation. But right now, it's Blackpool Combat Club up is 1-0-1 right now. You know, Blackpool Combat Club has the only pin in the series, so we are looking forward to what? Oh well, not even a pin. It was a pass out or tap out. I think he actually did tap out, and yeah. So I'm really looking forward to what happens in Greensboro with these guys.
Yeah. So getting into the match between Orange Cassidy and Mike Bennett, I love the fact that now OC is just like full on, like, his slacker thing. It's not even heavily a thing that much anymore. Like, he's all in on him being the international champion and having problems with the Undisputed Kingdom. So he just went out just from the jump and orange punched Matt Taven. He was beating up on Mike Bennett early on. But as he was getting pulled away by the referee, that's when Mike Bennett suplexed him and started getting some momentum on him. This match was really fast-paced as well. I enjoyed the fact that Mike Bennett decided to go over to talk shit about Orange Cassidy on commentary before he then just got the crap kicked out of him when he put the headset down. The way they filmed it, too, like, it, like, took me by surprise when he... Because I thought he was just going to go walk back in and then get kicked down. No, Orange Cassidy came flying out with a Tope Suicida, which was awesome. But eventually, as the match kept going on, Orange Cassidy was able to avoid a pile driver from Mike Bennett, and he hit the beach break, and he was able to get the victory. Matt Taven came in and started beating down Orange Cassidy. Roderick Strong came down, and they're going to try to beat up Orange Cassidy. And then Jake Hager comes out. He cleans house, and he saves Orange Cassidy, and then they announce that it's going to be Roderick Strong versus Jake Hager in the on Rampage taking place.
Did they explain why Jake Hager?
No, there was no explanation. Like I said, there's no... My headcanon is... Well, obviously, Jake Hager is saving his little brother. Like, his little twin brother. That's how it goes. You know?
And that's immediately what the guy that I was with went to. He's like, they should just put Jake Hager in all Gene stuff. He looks exactly like Orange Cassidy.
You do that, or you put the purple bucket hat on Orange Cassidy, you can't tell the difference other than the fact that one of them is shrunken and the other one is a big MMA dude.
And I'm like, if that's what they're going for, understand, your fans immediately got it. Because I didn't. I was like, I mean, it's Jake Hager and Orange Cassidy. Well, he's like, they look exactly alike. And I'm like, now
I was going to say, like I said, I would love nothing more than that being the case.
Now I can't unsee it, though. I can't unsee it. Every time I see it, I was like, oh, God. It looks like a big brother, little brother situation.
Yeah, no. It's, I hope that's the way they go with it, because I think it would be so funny. But
and Jake hasn't been doing anything.
No, exactly. Give him something to do. Yeah. I would love to see like what they decide to do with Jake Hager, because with the Jericho Appreciation Society being dead, like, it would very much be exciting to see what you could do with Jake Hager. So, yeah, I mean, we will see. But after this... Renee Paquette was set to interview Angelo Parker because he had a big date with Ruby Soho, and she walked up and she's like, I'll tell you all about our date Friday night. And then they are getting ready to go. A white SUV comes up, and Ruby was like, is that our ride? And I'm like, no, we got a Lyft. So like, we did not get this super nice car. And as they walk away, that's when Ric Flair comes out, and he's asked about Sting's retirement match by Renee. And he's like, I thought when I signed up for this whole thing, I'd be a bigger part of the picture. Like, I'm not mad with Sting. I'm just upset that I'm not more involved, because I should be right in the middle of things. And that's not what I've been. And he said, no, you know what? Between you and me, I'm going to explore other options, because I'm not trying to put you in the middle. I'm just telling you the truth. And that's when Ric Flair walks away and knocks on a dressing room, and it's the Young Bucks. And
Nicholas and Matthew Jackson, they're God.
They immediately ask him what he wants, and he said, asked him if they had time for him, and they said, let's talk. So like, we got a trio of shitheads in the room together now. That's so crazy. They peas in a pod, those guys.
I wouldn't go quite peas in the pods, but they're all kind of, you know, jerks.
I'm just saying, dude. I'm just saying. Okay. Moving on from that, Daniel Garcia then was in the ring, and he got interviewed about what happened last week with the Rated R superstar, Adam Copeland. He's on the shelf. He can't compete. And now Tony has said Daniel Garcia will be getting a shot at Christian Cage for the TNT Championship. That came out of nowhere.
This whole thing will go down for me just based on the details. Again, the Google added so much to this moment. It felt like, so Christian, dude, this promo, dude, this dude's a master right now.
Daniel Garcia did a very, very good job. And of course, the man who came out afterwards did an amazing job as well. So, first of all, love the fact the fans got behind Daniel Garcia for this opportunity. Like, I love the fact that they immediately like, okay, this is what we're getting. Cool. Like, we're right behind Daniel Garcia for this. And he talked about how, you know, fans were chanting, you deserve it, for him. And I didn't feel like I did for a lot of the time. So I always felt like I was destined for great things, but I was at my lowest point a couple months ago and I lost confidence, and I just needed 3 seconds. And at the end of the Continental Classic, I got those 3 seconds that changed my life. And every time I got knocked down, y'all picked me up. Every time I danced, y'all danced with me. And Adam Copeland, no one knows how long that match would have ended last week. But I have full confidence that if it went any longer, I would have made you tap out. So he talks about that and then says, not over between us, but next time you see me, I'll hold the TNT championship when we face off. And then he brings up Christian Cage, and that's when him and the patriarchy come out, Nick Wayne, Killswitch, and Mother Wayne. And Christian Cage was like, since Adam Copeland can't fight me, he will never have a chance at my TNT championship. Never. And Daniel, last week was just a byproduct of you standing in the ring with him, but it worked out pretty well because now you're the number one contender. And he goes on to be like, had a hell in a run, but I really don't think we should step into ring revolution. It's not that I don't think you're worthy. It's that I think you're not ready. You just want to make these people be entertained by your dance moves. I want to leave the arena every night the most dominant TNT champion of all time. And then that's when he brings up his childhood. He brings up his... He's like, do you know Jackie Garcia? And fucking doxes her. Like, just straight up address.
Do you know where, like, the, you know where the address is? You know where the address is?
It's
the address.
I did not actually look it up.
Sean Ross Sapp posted. It was an address to a cemetery. So apparently his mom's dead too.
Yeah, I was going to say. That's so, like, dude, I didn't even bother to look it
up. No, Sean, I wouldn't have either. But Sean Ross Sapp did it, and it was an address to a cemetery.
Doing the Lord's work. Doing the Lord's work. And then can you confirm to me that that Jackie was married to David Garcia? And he said, I understand that he is your father, and your father is dead. So thank you, Christian, for once again going with the dead dad route. Love it. Dude. And then he talks about how big of a fairy tale ending it would be for him to raise this championship after beating me in the name of your great father. But your father wasn't so great because he's a loser that lost his life to the bottle. And I don't want, and unlike him, I don't want to hurt you. I want to help you. I want to be your father. And Daniel Garcia then proceeds to be like, since you know so much about my dead father, why don't you come to the ring and I'll put you in the ground right next to him. I was like, Jesus. I was like, that's a way I've never seen somebody take a shot like that. It's like, oh yeah, my father is dead and you can be dead just like him. I'm like, who's, like, I've never heard a comeback like that for somebody when they get called out for stuff like that. Christian Cage then sent Nick Wayne to charge at him. They started beating him up. Daniel Garcia then got Wayne in a sharpshooter. And then Magic, Daddy Magic came out, and he stood up for Daniel Garcia and took a chair to the back of Killswitch.
And that's what I'm like. Daddy Magic, from day one, him and Angelo Parker has said it was their son. Not only does Daniel Garcia have a father, he has two fathers.
Exactly, dude. He doesn't need Christian to be his dad.
As I say, old school TV show reference. There was a TV show back in the day called My Two Dads, and I popped in my head at this moment. Again, I'm not gonna go too much. You can guess it's about, you know, a person with two dads, but there's a twist. You can Google it if you want to find out. But I just, like, that's what popped up in my head and made me.
I love the fact that he's still, like, so tied to the hip with Daniel Garcia from the 2.0 days. Like,
that's his
it's
son.
Just nice to see that they still. I know. Love it.
Yeah,
love
like it. Stuff doesn't go away in AEW. If I hated you back then, if we start tagging together, be sure that wrestler is going to address that they hated each other back then, right? If they're friends
otherwise,
and they have a connection.
Otherwise, it ain't gonna go well.
Yeah, other friends and connections, they're going to keep it. They don't. Stuff doesn't just go away. So
no, yeah, it does not. It's everything still holds meaning. Yeah, and this is honestly, like I said, it was very, very nice about how this happened and just, you know, making a nice little moment out of the bad situation with all that. So I was glad to see it at the very least that Daniel Garcia gets a huge opportunity. So I'm excited to see how he does too. Moving on, Timeless Toni Storm got a quick win over Sydney Winnell. So I do
commentary in local Oklahoma. I've actually called matches for her.
No way.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool. That I like, a pretty good moment. It doesn't happen a lot, but it was just like, oh, that's cool. So I saw it. I was like, that's, you know, her Oklahoma wrestler name. Obviously,
Sydney Winnell.
No, that no, I think that's like maybe her real name, but she didn't use her wrestling name. So I'm not going to say what say what it is, because, you know, she basically lost in 2 minutes. So she probably doesn't want those two things attached to each other. But I'm calling. I was like, but that's her. I know her. And they were like, hey. And I said that, and it was just kind of one of those cool moments.
Absolutely. So good to see her lock up with the Timeless One, Toni Storm. Now, you probably, I don't know if they, did they show this on the screen when you were there, when Deonna Purrazzo comes out for her match and then they have a stare down? Did they show what they did on screen?
No. So I'm on my phone and somebody's like, did y'all? And I was like, no. I mean, of course, we were looking at it. It was in color. And then the screen up there was just Deonna Purrazzo's entrance thing. So
yeah.
We had to see it on Twitter. But that was so fucking cool.
Spectacular work. Yes. Honestly, spectacular. I love it so, so much that how that went and how they set that up. Like, I love it. Like I said, it's another reason why I just love the presentation of Timeless Toni Storm and just all this type of stuff. Honestly, like I said, perfect image. Perfect. And then Madison Rayne, she took on Deonna Purrazzo, and Madison Rayne was hit with Toni Storm's finisher, which is the break a leg submission, and she makes Madison tap out. That's when Toni comes in and tries to take the shoe and whack her with it. She ducked it and then hit her with a kick, and then that's when she swung at Mariah May, who then got out of the way. And then that's when Toni Storm used the distraction to grab Deonna Purrazzo, and then she hit the break-a-leg submission on her. So
yes, and Madison took a pretty nasty drop on the head. She's okay.
I was just saying, yeah, thankfully she is. I didn't mention it just because I know she's thankfully okay with it. But it was kind of scary.
Hell no, it was nasty. And you couldn't see it in real time. But it's like someone put the clip up, like, oh, my God. And, it was like, because you could tell they checked on her afterwards. So it was like, dude, I was like, man, they could have went way worse. So I'm happy for Madison. But this Deonna and Toni is my favorite thing in a very long time. I've just really enjoyed this whole rivalry.
Yeah. So I said that I can't wait for when we get Deonna versus Toni. Like, Toni has been one of my favorite things in AEW so far. I do have the hat coming now, thankfully. I rectified that after not getting it when it first dropped. Moving on, we had the AEW World Tag Team Champions, Sting and Darby Allin, who had a bit of a message for the Young Bucks. Darby basically said, you know, when you're this close to the end, you look back on life and look, it puts things in perspective. That fame, spotlight, material things that we chase for, they don't mean anything. And they were looking at some old photos, and they show Sting with his kids when they were like little. And they were the same age as the Bucks kids are now. And like, this is the only thing that matters to him in the end is his family. And Sting goes, strikes a nerve because all my years in a pro wrestler, no one has messed with my own flesh and blood until you, Bucks. Because all this stuff going on in my personal life the last couple weeks, the Bucks attacked my sons, and now my father, 7 days ago, passed away. Said all that. First of all, I wouldn't say that with Christian working in the same company. That's all I'm saying. But at least there, he's retiring, so he's getting out of Dodge at least before Christian can even, like, Christian was licking his chops by when you said that. I'm just letting you know that. But coming out of that, he talked about his own mortality. He used to think he was invincible, and he still sometimes feels that way, but time catches up to him like it does for everybody. But one thing he knows, everything that's left in him is coming to Revolution with him, and the Bucks have the fight of their life on their hands now. So, great work in this promo. Honestly, I love the use of the images of his family. I thought that was great, tying it all together. And it ties it back more so, too, about what this story, like, is.
And I'm going to say, big thing to anyone that didn't like that Darby didn't address his family last night, it rang so much harder. And I saw so many people that thought this was, like, one of the best promos, best things that Sting done in wrestling, because Sting addressed it. it wasn't for Darby to address. I said that last week, and I'm reiterating it this week.
Yes, and it was 1,000% right.
And it ended up being, Darby wasn't the right person to address Sting's kids getting attacked. It had to be Sting. And now we know literally why Sting wasn't on the show.
Yeah,
there you go. Like, we know why Sting wasn't on the show. So it's like, all this stuff sometimes is just like, I understand. What we do in wrestling is we react to everything in a moment. So, again, there's no problem with that. But sometimes if you wait a second, things play out and it clears up.
Yeah, and like I said, it's everything seems to be on track now for what this story is. Like, the stuff with Darby, like, in everything that he said last week, that's not what this story is. It was enough to carry it for a week, but now that we've got Sting back and that we can get focused in on what this story is, which is like, it feels more intact, you know what I mean? And now we need to know what the hell the Young Bucks are doing with them talking to Ric Flair.
Yeah, and it was announced it's going to be a tornado tag, so.
Exactly, so with it being a tornado tag, could be a lot of shenanigans because of that.
I wonder what Sting is going to jump off in his last match.
Exactly. Something, I know. Yeah. We moved into a interview with Wardlow, who immediately told Shivani to get out of the ring. And Wardlow felt like dropping a pipe bomb tonight in more ways than one.
And he literally addressed everything anybody has questioned about him.
Exactly. This was his pipe bomb. And he talks about how 2 years ago, and I was in the building when this happened, thousands of people chanting his name city after city in a manner that hadn't been seen or heard in decades, being the next big thing. But apparently the rocket that was strapped to his back was put upside down, because since then he's been driven into the ground and screwed over and over again. And he would think, you know, the only homegrown day one original AEW megastar this company would have been champion long time ago, but he's never received a world title shot, and people need to be fired and thrown in jail for that fact. I was like, God damn.
Again, somebody's been reading the internet.
Yes. So, damn. He goes, look at some of the people who have held it. Kings, gods. So what does that make me? Because the best in the world, the real heavyweight champion, I beat his ass like nobody has in his entire career. His body is still falling apart from me. Gotta say,
what'd you think of that?
Honestly, well done. I like the fact to think that the reason why Punk can't stay healthy is because Wardlow beat the shit out of him.
Yes.
I honestly, like I said, I like it because it services what he's like. It gives purpose to the promo.
Yes.
It's like, how have I not been champion when this dude, who y'all hate so much and also fucked off, this guy held a championship, but I never have. Like, he's got reasons to be upset, so I understand why he would take credit at it. But also, you still lost the match, so, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Either way! he then talks about the former champ, the guy who's better than us, and we know it. He squashed him like an insect. And then he brings himself to the most dangerous man in the room, the king, current champ Samoa Joe. Can someone remind me when he and I were in a ring? Oh, yeah, I choked his ass out and beat him, too. So, again, what does that make me? Because it sounds like I'm the best in the world. I'm better than you, and you know it. And I'm the most dangerous man in the room. He called himself the uncrowned king of AEW, and it's time I start eating like one because I have been starving. I'm done being fed scraps. I am everything a world champion should be. And there's no one back there bigger, faster, or stronger than me. Anybody who wants to get in my way, just know this is no longer wrestling. This is war. Like, A-plus stuff from him. A-plus stuff from him. This is genuinely so, so well done. Like I said, I'm all for you referencing stuff with Punk if it furthers a storyline and furthers your character. That's honestly why I like this.
I don't know if this is him standing in front of a mirror. I don't know if this is him working with the promo guys like Dustin Rhodes or whatever in the back. I don't know what this is, but whatever it did, it worked. I don't know if he's just had this in 2 years and was just never given the mic to do it. You know, I don't know. I don't know what it is. But that man, went. I always thought he was okay. You know, okay promo and like, okay.
No,
like,
the promo was always the one thing I had issue with Wardlow with. I thought he was the best big man AEW had because not only was he a big dude who could power slam you into oblivion, but he could also do shit like jump off the top rope and do crazy speed shit that like not a lot of the big men in AEW could do.
Yeah, he's the marriage between looking like a guy and then also being able to perform. I thought this was really well done. I believe this is, you know, setting up a world title feud. And I don't know who, I mean, I have a feeling who it's going to be with, but who it's going to be with. But I'm really, yeah, I really enjoyed this Wardlow thing.
No, yeah, he absolutely took this shot and he hit for sure an extra base hit out of this. Like he smacked this thing really well. I give him all the credit in the world for that. We then had a quick little thing with the Bang Bang Scissors Gang when they talked about on the next Collision, they should team up as the Collision Cowboys representing the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. And I was just like, these goddamn names, dude. These goddamn names are just like absolutely ridiculous. And then we found out about a lot of things too in this period of time too. We had Will Ospreay being confirmed for Dynamite next week. We had Excalibur announcing that Meat Madness is taking place at Revolution with Wardlow. And then that's when Don Callis with the Don Callis family was brought up about it. And he talked about Will Ospreay against Takeshita. And he then said Powerhouse Hobbs was going to do damage in Meat Madness. So did we ever get full confirmation about that too? Like, is that just like a group of all the, like, is it a, like, how many people are in this Meat Madness match?
Yeah, no, we have not gotten any confirmation other than right.
I was just saying,
we got
else.
Powerhouse Hobbs and Hobbs and Wardlow. And I hope someone in the company gave Big E a call and be like, hey, we're going to use this. Are you good with it? I mean, because the whole meat thing, that's been Big E.
That's Big E.
I just, like I said, I don't think necessarily that he needed it. I just think it would have been cool if somebody gave them the call.
Like I said, at the very least, I would love him to be, guy, can we get your blessing to do this? Because Big E is one of the nicest people in pro wrestling. I feel like it's the only kind of courtesy you could do.
Yeah.
Fact that whole big meaty men slapping meat is literally word for word. He could trademark it.
Yes. I mean, it's his thing. So it's like, it's not one of those, like I said, it's just more of, it would be cool if they did, you know, give him the call. And like, it's required.
I would love it if he just came up to be the ring announcer for the Meat Madness match.
Dude.
I know that's not humanly possible right now, but I would love it.
Yes. It's just that dude, he does it. I mean, that's his thing. I'm looking forward to this. I started fantasy booking. I was like, Lance Archer has to be in this match. I mean, you could do Big Bill. You got to have Miro in the match. You know, he was the meat thing, you know. We got the meat chance in it. And I was just going through the list of the big dudes you got to have in this match. And in my own personal, you got to have the meat man. You got to have Johnny Hungry in it. I just think that would be pretty funny, you know, if like you have these giants in it, and then John Silver.
John Silver is literally even called the Meat Man.
And my friend's like, man, we got to have Butcher in it. And I was like, pun intended.
Yes.
I'm like, you have to have Butcher in the Meat Match.
If you're going to make this Meat Madness, you have to go all the way with it.
Yes, you got to have the Butcher in the Meat Match. And I think you should have like Paul White be the special referee.
Something, man.
Just like, dude, I think everything.
Either that or
involved,
just do commentary. Well, yeah, we know Paul White. Commentary.
Paul White doing commentary. You just got to have somebody big in there calling the match. I'm like, go all the way with it. Like, just make this And the
like
winner,
when WWE did the little person match, yes, like the VLC match, they went all the way with it. Yeah, like if you're gonna do Meat Madness, you got to go all the way with it too.
And if the marketing people aren't calling Omaha Steaks to, if they're not calling Omaha Steaks to be, you know, the advertiser for this match, and literally what you should win
someone's
is
not
a
doing
year's,
their job.
Yeah, a year's supply of steak absolutely should be the winner of this match.
For real. But moving off of that,
yes,
we had the main event of this show, which is the trios match between the world champion Samoa Joe, Brian Cage, and Swerve Strickland versus Hook, Hangman, and Rob Van Dam. And this is a good closer. I still think, obviously, the opening match was the best match of the night. It felt very Rampage. I mean, very Rampage of that, with the best match being first, and
the opening match was the main event.
Exactly. The opening match was the main event, just like typical Rampage kind of stuff. But this match was still very solid. I like the work that they did. I also love the fact that, too, like, RVD is just, like, got so many signature moves that, like, you can get so much time out of a match done by him just rolling through all of his signatures. Like, he's the type of guy where, like, if you load him up on 2K, like, he's got four different signatures you can switch between.
And he is absolutely this is the best use of RVD. Having him come in four or five times a year, getting the pops, getting his shit in, doing something cool, and then getting out of there. I'm like, people like sign RVD, that's cool, but, I mean, do you really have a spot for him? This is his best spot.
Yeah, no, this is what, like, works best for him, like, in this kind of spot. He did great work in this match. Hangman and Swerve getting the chance to go at each other again, it was great. This match went, just everybody getting all their stuff in, all their finishers, boom, 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 at one point. And then eventually, as RVD goes for the 5-star frog splash, Brian Cage shoves him, knocks out Hook with a lariat, and that's when Joe comes in, and he gets a rear naked choke in, and he gets the victory for the heels. And Joe continuing to be the king that he claims he is, and reigning all over AEW with his title run. And it was well done. I will say it was a well done trios match. A solid way to close it out. For what was a pretty dang good show, I will say. Floyd, I know you can speak to it a little bit more with you being there.
Dude, it was just a fun match. It really was. I'm like, I mean, I could go into like depth or whatever, but it was just a fun match. It was like Swerve is super over. We got to Swerve. When we drive, we got to do the na-na dance, and it was amazing. Yeah. And it was just like everybody hit their spots. Hook got his suplex in on Samoa Joe. There was a story with Hook and Samoa Joe. There was a story in everybody match. There was a story with everybody. RVD was kind of the odd man out. I love the Hangman promo. I love the Hangman promo before the match, and he's like, this is our chance to hurt Swerve. He does not give a fuck about Samoa Joe.
He does not give a damn about being
the world champion. He does not care. His whole purpose in life is to make sure Swerve doesn't become the world champion. And I love it. I feel like this is leading to a AEW, like a cage match or some, like, because you thought the Texas Death Match was going to blow off. Maybe they, you know, do a bring back the unsanctioned match or something, because this has to be leading to something with Swerve and Hangman, because literally Hangman's desire and everything is just to keep the title off Swerve, and I fucking love it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a death wish for, like, Swerve Strickland. He wants him to suffer the most.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you would think it has to blow off with something like that, but that was AEW Dynamite. Rampage already aired, of course. Floyd, did you want to comment on the Rampage stuff that you got to see?
I mean, I saw the Rampage stuff. I personally believe Mariah May and Anna Jay tore it down. I thought they had a really good match. It was really heavy hitting. It reminded me of a female version of Mox and Dax because they were just, they were throwing forearms, throwing bombs. I thought it was one of Anna Jay's best matches. This was live. I have not watched it on TV, so maybe that changes a little bit, but live, I thought it was one of Anna Jay's best matches. And yeah, I thought it was a really good match. There was a triple threat trios match. That was, you know, that was good. I don't think Rampage is a skip this week, especially, but if you're going to watch it and you're like, oh, you piecemeal and you don't necessarily watch the whole thing, why, I say watch Mariah May and Anna Jay.
Okay. And then turn it off when the Young Bucks show up.
I mean, okay, so the Young Bucks, in a brilliant move of just, like, this is them going to the next level with their heelness. It is no longer the Meltzer driver. It's dead. The Meltzer driver is dead. It is the Tony Khan driver. And it was funny because how they did it, because, you know, you weren't going to hear it on, you know, the people in ring weren't going to hear the announcers say they've renamed it. So when they were about to hit the move, they screamed, this is the Tony Khan driver.
Yeah, and everybody screams it out. Yeah, exactly.
And then does the move. And it, yeah, the match lasts.
I'm just saying, though, dude, like, Meltzer driver was just taking his last name. Like, why not just call it the Khan driver?
No, Tony, because it could be Nick Khan. Tony Khan driver.
But again, doesn't that just work both ways, though?
There's only like, one.
Go crazy about it.
And there's only one Meltzer in wrestling, but there's.
I understand that.
The two cons, so they won't.
Just call it the TK driver.
There you go. Just, no.
Instead of the Tony, your Tony Khan driver, it goes too long.
Yes, exactly. They don't want anything about what they're doing right now to be appealing to anyone. They want you to hate every. They want you to hate how they dress. They want you to hate how they move. They want you to hate how they talk. They literally want you to hate their fucking names, and it's fucking brilliant. I mean, this is probably my peak Young Bucks fandom right now, because I just think everything they're doing is so dickish that it is getting under people's skin, and this is what heals.
Oh, Floyd is like, I know he's like absolutely like overjoyed with how much like I'm seething.
Yes, because this is what heels used to be. It is like, this is what heel used to be. It's like, I don't want you to cheer me. It's like so many, like the two most over guys over the last 2 years have been MJF and Swerve, and they're literally the most despicable people ever. And it's like, Christian Cage and the Young Bucks right now are doing heel work. This is heel work, and I fucking love it.
I got nothing.
They don't want you to like them. They don't want you to be appealing. They want you to think about.
Exactly, which is why I get stuck, and I'm just like,
You're like, I'm thinking about turning the channel. Good. Let the hate flow through you. That's what they want. They're using the hate, and it's like the more you hate it, they're going to do it more. Yeah, I love it. I love what they're doing right now. They are... They by no means my favorite tag team. It's very clear by my social media name who my favorite tag team is. But I am really enjoying everything they're doing right now. And it's just like I said, greatest tag teams of all time. We happen to be living in this world right now where we're probably watching the two greatest tag teams of all time, and they're in the same company. And like, if you say the Bucks are better than FTR, I'm not going to fight you too hard. And if you say FTR is better than the Bucks, I don't really have anything to say about that, because these dudes are exceptional in two completely different ways right now. And it's just like, as a person that is a tag team wrestling lover and geek and smark and all the other words you can come up for it, man, this is a golden period of tag team wrestling.
Yeah,
and as somebody that didn't like the tag team division. What, 2 months ago? Yeah, 2 months ago. It's like we got two.
You say that, I will say, but your boys FTR on Collision are wrestling a team that's not a name team.
But that's what I'm saying. But they're wrestling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were in their trio stuff, and then it was like, let's get tag teams in there. And honestly, I think it's building up. They're gonna win, right? They're gonna win, and we're gonna talk about the rankings in a second. I think
they haven't tweeted out the rankings yet, have they?
I don't know. New.
Yeah, on the site there's no new rankings yet.
Okay. Well, then they'll probably do it after Collision, so we don't really need to talk about. But I feel like how it's leading up, the match at Revolution is going to be like 1 versus 2 or 2 versus 3 because the Young Bucks are the number one contender. I think it's going to be 2 versus 3.
It will probably be 2 versus 3.
So yeah, they are literally doing it where the match at Revolution is going to lead to the next contenders. Come on. Come on. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. Come on.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a lot online for that for sure. For Collision, that's it, coming up on Saturday. You're going to have Kira Hogan versus Serena Deeb. Thunder Rosa will also be in action. Powerhouse Hobbs will be facing Sammy Guevara in a no disqualification match.
And I feel like they're going towards Serena Deeb versus Thunder Rosa. If you see, it's kind of parallel. They're not talking about it. They're not addressing each other, but they're kind of on this parallel winning streaks
where they have to cross.
They're going to have to cross, and maybe one of them goes after the TBS title. I don't know, but it just seems like they're building to them wrestling each other, which we might end up getting. You know, like I said, I don't know, but we might end up getting it at the pay-per-view.
Yeah. The Bang Bang Scissor Game will be in action. FTR will face Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty. Brian Keith will face off against Malakai Black. And the internet is exploding because they're like, holy shit, they gave Malakai Black a singles match.
Oh, it's just like Brian Keith, too. I just thought, I was like, this is a banger. I didn't even think about the fact that Malakai Black doesn't work singles matches. I was like, oh, Brian Keith versus Malakai Black, sign me up.
I'm all for it as well. And then, of course, Ryan Danielson versus Jun Akiyama.
Dude, yeah, and again, this is like Brian Danielson's last year. That's the story. Why should you care about Jun Akiyama? Even if you've never seen Jun Akiyama, never seen him wrestle, don't know anything about him, just know Brian Danielson brought this man from Japan as a dream match for him. This is a Brian Danielson dream match. This is not, I know this could be for some wrestling fans, but this is someone that Brian Danielson wanted to work with. They flew him into America to do this match in Springfield, Missouri, of all places. But Springfield's getting a banger.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, like Springfield is getting a lot of really good matches. And I think this card that you're seeing for Collision is, this is what, if you're asking what the Collision brand is, this card is the Collision brand. Honestly, a bunch of really good wrestling matches.
For sure. That is everything coming up in AEW. The last thing we want to touch on before we close the show out real quickly is the results of the Wrestling Observer Awards, which came out. I'll go through real quickly, and I'll just talk about the AEW-related awards that were won. So Wrestler of the Year was Will Ospreay. Most Outstanding was Will Ospreay. Tag Team of the Year, FTR.
Boom. Back-to-back. Just like the Chiefs. Boom.
Tag Team of the Year was FTR, like I said. Best on Interviews, Eddie Kingston. Best Weekly Television Show, AEW Dynamite. Match of the Year, Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay, Wrestle Kingdom 17. And then Japanese MVP was Will Ospreay. European Year MVP was also Will Ospreay. I find that incredibly hysterical. Non-heavyweight MVP was El Hijo del Vikingo. And then you had Most Improved was Julia Hart. Most Charismatic, MJF. Bryan Danielson Award went to Bryan Danielson for Best Technical Wrestler. Best Brawler went to Jon Moxley. Best Flying Wrestler was Vikingo again. Don Callis was the Best Non-Wrestler. Best TV Announcer, once again, Excalibur. Best Major Wrestling Show was Revolution. Best Wrestling Maneuver is Will Ospreay's Hidden Blade. Worst Feud of the Year was MJF versus the Devil. So there was one thing there. And then Promoter of the Year was
AEW. Actually won the top two worst gimmicks of the year.
Yes, the devil. Yeah, and QTV. Worst gimmick was the Devil. Yes.
And then second was QTV. So they got one and two.
They got one and two. I don't know about QTV because, like I said, that was my debut of Harley Cameron. So you can't say that it wasn't worth something.
Dude, and, you know, again, again, like just like last year, take these with a grain of salt.
Exactly. I mean,
if you like something better, if you like
final
something,
thing, though, yeah. Final thing though for the final AEW one best gimmick, Timeless Tony Storm. Let's fucking go. Let's go.
Best gimmick. Again,
let's go.
Again, I will say this. The big ones were like the two that didn't. The ones that shaped the world were the two you didn't talk about, and we're going to bring them up now. For the first time since they debuted, AEW did not win Best Promotion of the Year.
Yes.
And
for the first time in decades, WWE won it.
WWE won it. And for the first time in decades, I mean, you know, Promoter of the Year went to, Booker of the Year went to Triple H. Promoter of the Year went to Nick Khan. WWE is literally the hottest organization in the world right now. Like, tickets can't be bought fast enough. They're selling out SmackDowns and Raws. People love everything they're doing. If you look at the American wrestler, it was Cody Rhodes. Dude, this
I will say, though, like I said, I agree with you on that point. Like I said, it's a hot time for them, but I also still find it hysterical, the fact that it's, like, promotion of the year, but also worst show of the year is worst major wrestling show is Revolution. It's Crown Jewel. Worst, like, in like you see, like, on the rankings how close, like, NXT and other shows were close to winning some other awards, and then best weekly show was still Dynamite.
Yes,
it is kind of funny.
Yes, but,
you know, it doesn't matter. Like I said, these awards, like we say, you take them with a grain of salt. Like, if you put your, like, everything matters with who wins this award, like, it doesn't, like, these awards are just for fun.
Yeah,
they should just be for fun.
Yeah, Observer Newsletter Awards. This is for people that pay to be a part of the newsletter. That's who we vote.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with it. If you find it important, that's great. If you don't find it important, that's great too. But what I'm saying is, like, WWE's hot, right? They're the hottest product. The hottest the product has ever been. It's honestly, other than the Cody stuff, for me, it's the least interested I've ever been in WWE. Like, in my life.
Like, dude, my most interesting thing got canned because of what happened in the Rumble.
So, again, minus the Cody stuff, if you read a recap from Raw last month and a recap from Raw this month, it's pretty much the same thing. And I feel the same way kind of about SmackDown. Other than the Cody stuff. This is subtracting the Cody stuff because I'm obviously interested in the Cody stuff. It's the reason I'm going to WrestleMania. So it's just like, right now, I enjoy 20% of WWE. I don't care about 80% of it, which is, link in, lifelong WWE fan. You know, it's just like, I feel like nothing happens week to week. And as also a lifelong soap opera fan, soap operas have this happen too, that they have like this really big storyline and it's like, oh, that matters. And not a lot else is happening in the rest of the show. So it's, again, I understand what WWE, what's going on. And I think WWE as a whole, is going to get better when the title is, if the title is in Cody's hands. Because I just think it's going to give you some fresh matchups. It's going to give you the idea that the title could change hands, that kind of stuff. And I, you know, again, we're not a WWE podcast, but whatever. I'm just like, we're talking about it. Again, we've already talked about the AEW stuff. So this is Wrestling Observer Awards. And then, you know, FTR. I mean, I'm feeling my back-to-back. This is my favorite time to be a fan of just everything. Kansas City Chiefs back-to-back. Cody's main eventing WrestleMania back-to-back. Now FTR driving home the tag team back-to-back, which I even considered 2023 a down year overall for tag team wrestling. But FTR is the brightest spot in that world, and they are the best tag team in the world. I'm like, hey, if you don't ask me, ask the Observer Newsletter, which I don't vote in, ESPN, which I don't vote in, all the awards, PWI, all of them. FTR's won them all. Clean sweep. So it's like, you can say, oh, they're the best. You like, well, they are the best tag team in the world by any measurable ranking system. Everybody has picked them as number one, When somebody, once one team was taking time off, these motherfuckers was working every Saturday. Now they're working Wednesday, and then they come back and work Saturday. They clearly could have took Collision off this week and just saved it for that. No, they're in. And just to let y'all know, the taping schedule is a little weird. Collision tomorrow is gonna, they're gonna Collision, and then they're gonna tape next week's Rampage, because on Wednesday in Huntsville, Alabama, they're actually doing Dynamite, and then they're taping Collision right after. So Collision will be recorded next week as they get ready for Revolution. But yeah, it's just right now, it's really good time for me to be a fan of everything I'm kind of a fan of right now. Even the Oklahoma City Thunder are good, and I don't even talk about them.
Only thing I got right now is Red Wings. That's all I got right now. So either way, with that, I think that's going to close things out for this episode of All Things Elite. Guys, thank you guys so much for tuning in every single week. We apologize again that this took a little bit longer to come out, but we had to make sure we get an episode out, and we'll be on next week guaranteed for our AEW Revolution predictions as well. So guys, thanks for listening. Be sure to keep downloading this fine show on Google or Apple Podcasts. If you listen to us on Spotify or wherever you choose to listen to us, give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. Rate, review, subscribe, and follow us on Twitter at ATElitePod, at Social Suplex. Follow those guys who make this show possible and check out all their other shows. I'm at Austin Sumowicz, S-Z-U-M-O-W-I-C-Z, and Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. With that, I am about to go to sleep. Floyd is about to watch Elimination Chamber in Perth, so I will let this man take us home on this episode of All Things Elite.
I'm going to keep it short so Austin can go to sleep. Thanks, everyone, for listening. As we head towards the end of winter, I just want to let everybody know that we're going to get one more freeze, so prepare accordingly. Don't put your shit up yet, because we always get that one more goodbye to winter freeze. And I thank you all for listening to both of us. We're consistent. I think this is what, 3 weeks in a row that we actually put out a show. I think this is our longest streak in a while. So stay with us. We're going to keep going. We didn't make a big deal of it, but I believe the 28th is our 5-year anniversary of ATE. Yes, it was a very big different show when it debuted, but I am been glad to do this. I found my tag team partner, Austin, and I thank everyone that listens, and I will leave you how I always leave you. Whether it is home, work, or school, always do your best to be a leader.